From KUAZ News in Tucson, I'm Julie Burock, and this is Arizona Spotlight. The November 8th general election is fast approaching, and one of the races heating up is between Republican incumbent Kathleen Dunbar and Democratic challenger Karen Ulick for the Ward 3 seat on the Tucson City Council. We'll have a candid discussion with both candidates on the issues. Also, University of Arizona Assistant Professor Alif Shafak explores the nation of Turkey's history as the country is being considered for membership to the European Union. Those stories and more are coming up. In a little over a week, Tucson voters will be asked to make a decision in the race for the Ward 3 seat on the Tucson City Council. The candidates are Republican incumbent Kathleen Dunbar and Democratic challenger Karen Ulick. Both sat down with me recently for a candid conversation about the issues facing our city. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you, Julie.
I'd like to just kind of delve right into the issues. First, let's talk about impact fees. It seems to be an issue of contention in this race. What's your position on impact fees, First Councilwoman Dunbar?
Impact fees, there's just a misconception within the community, because before this council initiated the impact fees, we have charged developers for all impacts. So in other words, when they're going into a subdivision, I think there's a misconception from a lot of people that they think that they just go in and build the home, when in fact, they have to widen the roads, they put in intersections, they do the lights. It's all been required. And it goes back to when we first started the discussion about impact fees. My question to city staff was, what will be the net gain? In other words, will we come out ahead with impact fees as compared to what we're requiring today? Or, you know, is it even, Stephen, or will we actually be ahead? And with impact fees now, some of the developers will still be able to get credits. They'll go ahead and they will do some of the road improvements, which is probably a good thing, because any time the private sector does it, they can do it for far less than what city government does.
Ms. Ulick, your response?
Kathleen openly advocated for a 10-year delay in commercial impact fees at the same time that she was willing to vote for a garbage tax that was immediately imposed upon families and senior citizens in the community. I think the evidence of our local government's failure is all around us now. We have crumbling infrastructure and residential streets, and we're just really far behind because my opponent has been so ardently opposed to having development and growth pay its fair share.
And I would say that we really are far behind. I think that's one thing we absolutely agree on. But let's remember, I've only been sitting on the council for the last 3.5 years. The crumbling infrastructure started long before I was on the council, and that's because we had 20 years of a mayor and council that refused to put money into the infrastructure and totally ignored our city. And I also want to be real clear that I never advocated for a garbage fee. And I think that's a very wrong term and a very unfair term to be using. And it wasn't at the same time. Let's be perfectly clear. We did the garbage fee a year ago. We did impact fees this year.
The Tucson City Council recently approved an ordinance requiring all medications containing pseudoephedrine to be held behind store counters or in a glass box. The ordinance goes beyond state law. What is the next step in fighting this meth epidemic and crime in general here in Tucson? Councilwoman Dunbar?
Well, and actually the state law requires everything to be locked up November 2nd. We went a little step farther with some additional cold medicines, and if you'll go into the stores now, you pretty much see everything is behind the counter, as a lot of them have been doing for the last 4 months. The one thing we're working on immediately is an electronic log. My opponent has said she wants a paper log, and that's what they were trying to push through the legislature. If you talk to any pharmacist in this community, if you talk to our police, if you just use your common sense, a paper log serves no real purpose. We know that for the most part, the people have been using the pseudoephedrine products, they've been stealing them. Getting them locked up was key. That was very, very, very important. So now we are working on electronic log. So instantaneously, that when you buy it at Albertsons, and if you go across the street and try to buy it at Walgreens, the computers are talking to each other. We want this to be jurisdictional. We actually want it to be statewide.
Ms. Ulick?
I've been aggressively advocating for the restrictions that were adopted this September and October since February of this year when I announced my candidacy. It's unconscionable that the mayor and council and my opponent delayed removing all of these medications from the shelves more quickly. As my endorsement in the Tucson Citizen noted, Kathleen is really a Johnny-come-lately. This is directly quoted from the Citizen. A Johnny-come-lately to the anti-meth effort, kowtowing to the retail lobby and weakly linking the registration of Sudafed purchasers to potential identity theft. Our Attorney General, the chief law enforcement officer in our state, was right to try and get legislation through this year to restrict methamphetamine in every way possible. It's not a time to compromise when we have the highest crime rates of other cities in the country. It's not a time to compromise. It's not a time to water down proposals that could have an effect.
The state as a whole is becoming increasingly aware of the environment, protecting our water supply and our riparian habitat. How can we balance the growth situation in our area and still protect our environment?
I think, again, planning is going to be critical here, and I have met with county planners and city planners and others who point to the importance not only of the city being more proactive in this area, but also making sure that our habitat conservation plans and other efforts really complement the Sonoran Desert Conservation Plan. You know, as we have learned, environmental conservation is important not only to our health and well-being and a reflection of what I believe are our values, but it's also very important to our economy locally.
Councilwoman Dunbar?
I think that's a really good question, especially talking about the water, because this area is so far ahead in water conservation as the rest of the state. And I really am hoping that we can take some of our good practices and get Maricopa County and some of the other counties in Arizona to apply the same good practices with water, because water is precious. On the other hand, you know, with the Houghton Avenue corridor, you know, this is the first time the city's really ever had a chance to plan. In the past, what has happened is, you know, we've had the city limits, and then we had, you know, the county do development projects, and then we annexed and we annexed and we annexed. So we've really never had the open space or an opportunity to plan.
Ms. Ulick, you've made the statement that Councilwoman Dunbar has represented the interests of very powerful lobbying groups and special interests. Can you explain that statement for me and why you believe this to be true?
I believe it's really clear in my opponent's voting record that the positions she has taken on issues are more in service to powerful industries and wealthy special interests than they are in service to the people of Tucson. In other instances, for example, taking a strong position against methamphetamine would require not bowing to the arguments of the retail lobby. And in a town hall meeting in front of many, many people, including reporters from the Arizona Daily Star, I heard Kathleen argue against the methamphetamine bill proposed by Terry Goddard, and her statement specifically was the retailers have a real problem with this, and she went on to articulate the arguments against the bill from a very powerful lobbying group. That's not leadership.
Councilwoman Dunbar, your response to
that. I guess I would just like to hear some of Karen's successes. As she says, she's been advocating and doing all this good work. Where are the successes? Karen has manipulated information and made statements throughout this campaign that are absolutely, positively not true. I want to go on record. As I have never met an oil lobbyist in my life. I have never met a pharmaceutical lobbyist in my life. They spend time in Phoenix. They spend time in Washington, D.C. They do not spend time with the Tucson City Council. Karen talks about special interests, but yet she is the executive director of a nonprofit agency, which she will still continue to work at if she is elected. I ask you, where is the special interest? What is to keep her from going to people and saying, well, gee, if you really want this, you have to contribute to my nonprofit agency? There's no transparency there. They don't have to show records. They don't have to show who contributes. She is going to continue at her job. That is special interest. I will be a full-time council member, as I have been for the last 4 years. Again, I just don't think Karen has even a clue as to what the job is for mayor and council. We don't meet with lobbyists. I've never met with a retail lobbyist. It's another misrepresentation and another lie that's coming out of her mouth.
When I worked at the Primavera Foundation, we developed both single-family housing and multifamily housing for residents in Tucson. We revitalized key neighborhoods in terms of standing up to special interests. Recently, the huge corporate giant Labor Ready was required to refund over $150,000 to day labor workers in Arizona as a result of my work in partnership with the Arizona Attorney General. In addition, over five local governments now are examining and poised to pass ordinances restricting payday lenders. That's also the result of my work. My opponent asked the question, what is to keep someone from accepting funds that would influence their behavior? I would point to integrity. I would point to a person's track record. And I think that mine speaks volumes about who I would represent and what I would stand for.
And absolutely, that is such a mistruth, because you go talk to the neighborhood presidents and you talk to the people in Ward 3 and you ask them about where we are today compared to where we were. Quite frankly, I'm tired of her putting herself on a pedestal where her integrity is without reproach and mine isn't, because anybody who knows me will tell you that I am probably one of the most honest people they have ever met. You know, Karen just, she says things that just absolutely aren't true.
Well, and my final question just has to do with Tucson as a city. Councilwoman Dunbar, what is your vision for Tucson? What do you hope Tucson can become?
Very much where we're moving today. It's a community that recognizes that we have a very diverse population. We have very diverse needs. We have, for example, and that's something I talked about 4 years ago and we're really kind of working towards now, but we don't really have a 20-something lifestyle. We spend our tax dollars sending children through elementary school, middle school, high school, the university, and then they graduate. And it's like, is the job really here that I want? Is the lifestyle really here that I want? It looks better up in Phoenix. How do we create that lifestyle that keeps our young people here? In the same sense, how do we make sure that our seniors are taken care of? We're a community that has many different personalities. The East Side is totally different from Midtown. Midtown is entirely different than West. And one of the projects I will continue and actively work on is the land use code, because right now we're a one-size-fits-all community. The land use code treats the Southeast the same as it does Midtown, and we're absolutely not. And that's one of my high priorities during my next term.
Ms. Ellick, what is your vision for Tucson?
I think we have everything that we need to build one of the most exciting, beautiful cities in the country. So my vision is to mobilize those resources in a way that build a healthy environment for our families and our neighborhoods, a vibrant economy that everybody can benefit from, and a city that will reflect our values, a city that will make sure that everybody has a seat at the table in local government, and that progress that we make is in keeping with the values that we hold.
Kathleen Dunbar and Karen Ulick, I thank you both for being here. Again, the general election is Tuesday, November 8th. It's important to note that today is the last day to request an early mail-in ballot. Up next on Arizona Spotlight, U of A professor Alif Shafak explores Turkey's past as the country is being considered for membership to the European Union. You're listening to Arizona Spotlight on KUAZ. This month, discussions began to determine whether Turkey belongs in the European Union. A variety of factors will be discussed in making that decision, including Turkey's history of human rights abuses and ethnic resentments against Kurds, Cypriots, and Armenians that date back to the Ottoman era. Excavating Turkey's past is a central theme in the work of novelist Alif Shafak, who's also an assistant professor at the University of Arizona in the Department of Near Eastern Studies. In the following piece, which is part of the documentary series Worlds of Difference, Shafak explores her nation's past on a sad, hilly street in Istanbul, where she once lived and wrote. It's called The Street of the Cauldron Makers.
At the first glance, there's nothing extraordinary about the place. Just another narrow, winding street in Istanbul. Only this one sharply slopes down to the Bosphorus, which divides Europe from Asia. From where I stand, I can see that band of water in the distance, a shimmering silver. At the top of the street, nearly hidden behind a green iron fence, stands an ageless tomb. It is the tomb of the saint who protects the street against all evil. Yet, given the street's history, I tend to think this is a saint that has been sleeping on the job. Or perhaps he isn't sleeping. After all, his tombstone is written in the Ottoman script, long ago banished by the engineers of the modern Turkish state in favor of the Western alphabet. Perhaps the patron saint has simply been trying to convey a message from the past, but in a script the new generations can no longer understand. Our conversation with the past has been broken, but our history, our stories lie here, in the layers just beneath our feet. As a storyteller, it is my job to collect them. Right across from the saint stands a small grocery. The owner of the place is a slim, balding man in his 60s. Mehmet is here every day, from early morning till dusk. After dark, his son takes the shift. You can find almost everything here, from pomegranates to laundry detergents, from candy bars to alcohol, which some conservative grocers refuse to sell.
This grocery is open 24 hours. I don't sell much during the day, but at night I sell more. Bread during the day, beer at night.
Other than the usual customers, Muslims and non-Muslims alike, the grocer also serves the Russian and Moldavian working girls living in the grimy hotel up the street.
I treat the same, a child or adult. Someone doesn't have enough money to pay for something. I feel bad and I usually don't ask. Someone says I'm hungry, I give bread. And my kids get angry at me.
He even cares for the street's army of cats. Some incredibly majestic, some so miserable. The grocer and I, we look outside to a cascading rain. Water gushes down in a river toward the Bosphorus. Sometimes I think of my old street as a boat traveling through time, a street boat expelling its passengers every few years, only to take on new ones who have no memory of the past. The water streams as if to remind us of how easily things can be washed away on Kazancı. But it's not only rainwater that has been pushed down this steep street throughout its history.
On the 6th of September, there was a nationalist uprising, 1955.
50 years ago, the street was populated by Turks, Jews, Armenians, and Greeks. In 1955, throngs of Turkish nationalists gathered here, chanting slogans and anthems before they razed to the ground virtually every store operated by ethnic minorities. There was so much shattered glass all around that the whole neighborhood glittered like a mirror in the sun. On that day, some among the mob dragged out the newly introduced, pasty white rounded refrigerators and rolled them one by one all the way down our street, cheering with the fall and crash of each machine.
There were wheels of cheese. They rolled it down the street. Because the grocer was Greek, they took his cheese and rolled it down the street. Of all Turkey's neighbors, the Greeks are my favorite. Yes, I am sad. We are sad because we were so fond of them. Also, as a grocer, I was very fond of them. They were good customers. They know quality. The Greeks, they like artichokes a lot. Half of our customers were Greeks and Armenians. They were afraid to stay here. They left Turkey.
Once in a while in my dreams, I see refrigerators spinning down our street. Only those make no noise, do not tumble. Instead, They float light as a feather along a serene river of rainfall.
Okay, this is 35 points. If you like this, I can put the glue here. I mean, whichever you like.
In another part of Istanbul, inside the Grand Bazaar, this is Nick, an Armenian jeweler whose family was pushed off the street of cauldron makers. He grew up hearing all about the events of 1955.
Those days was very terrible. Lots of shops are broken, you know, and people were coming like hundreds by hundreds, you know, and they were just like animals. They were crazy. They're breaking everywhere.
He goes to America very often, as he has relatives and business partners in California. He sells pastırma, a kind of spicy pastrami so dear to both Turks and Armenians. I ask him, despite all this that happened, why hasn't he wanted to leave Turkey? Why hasn't he settled in America or elsewhere?
All my relatives, cousins, all friends are there. And each time I go to America, they keep asking me when I'm going to move. And I think I'll never move this country. Sometimes when they hear my name, they say, "Are you Armenian?" "Yes." "When did you come?" I said, "I was here before you come. We are here since 3,000 years.
The ethnic minorities weren't the only ones our street boat disgorged. During the 1970s, the street of cauldron makers became notorious for its cluster of Sami residents, Istanbul's underbelly of drug dealers, pimps, and transvestite prostitutes. They used to live here, all of them, in the flats where, later, we would live. This used to be their street. Now, only a few remain and remember. Madame Turkian lives in a dingy basement room with bare walls and meager furnishings. Six other transvestites, much younger, sit on their haunches and listen to her respectfully. Turkian has been living on the street for more than 30 years. She knows its stories. She blames the transvestites themselves for their expulsion from the street.
"We should behave well," I told them. "We shouldn't lose these houses." But they didn't behave well. They kept on showing their bodies in the windows. So they were kicked out of those houses.
Istanbul police broke down doors and forced them out. Those who resisted were beaten with hoses.
They were kicked out of those houses, onto the street. And on the streets, they had to hitchhike. They began to do prostitution on the roadsides.
Many began doing business on the highways, only to make the inside pages of Turkish newspapers when killed in hit-and-run accidents. During the years to follow, our street boat took on yet another group of passengers. With the collapse of the Soviet Union, a large number of jobless people, especially women, found their way to Kazancı from Russia, Ukraine, Romania, Moldavia. Some were transients. Others came to stay, working as dancers in glitzy nightclubs. The flow of women from the ex-Soviet Union coincided with the flow of students from Central and North Africa. And this went hand in hand with migration from the little towns in the province of Anatolia, coming to the big city for better jobs and living standards. I now stand at the end of Kazancı, near the bottom of the street and its second grocery store. Here, there are no beer cans, no rakı, the Turkish brandy. This is Gülsüm, the conservative grocer. She's from Anatolia too.
I don't get out and encounter other people much. The ones I do see, the ones I talk to are fine. There is no problem with them. Thanks be to God. Since I don't go anywhere else, I don't know. I just go from here to home each day.
The differences between ethnic, religious, or sexual minorities have been sharply drawn throughout the history of the street of cauldron makers. And yet, There came a time when such differences entirely lost their meaning. The night of the earthquake in the summer of 1999.
That night, God forbid it should happen again. We were sleeping. We must have woken up with the noise and the shaking. There was a bright red thing, like a flame, like fire.
Only on that night, only when there were survivors in a shared misfortune, did the conservative grocer on Kazancı offer a cigarette to an aging transvestite and an old Greek neighbor, and they all smoked their cigarettes together. Even so, the very next day, the ground had settled again and old boundaries were quickly redrawn.
Because you can't get along with everyone, some people have lost themselves. You can't be close to whoever you meet. Allah will not come to them. That's the way it is.
Yani böyle. That's the way it is. Thus they and their stories came and went. The Armenians, the Greeks, the transvestites, the Africans, the Russian working girls. All these people seem to have but one thing in common. All have been fleeting passengers of the street of cauldron makers. And then, in the late 1990s, artists, musicians, bohemians, activists, feminists boarded our street boat, carrying a new set of stories. I came here around the same time. I'm inside a coffee house on Kazancı. At one table, I notice a hippie-like woman playing dominoes alongside Kurdish revolutionaries and the pizza boy. These new groups are open-minded, critical, and they have the will to coexist in a way their grandfathers didn't. They only know Kazancı as it is today. Their eyes are fixed on the future. Outside again, in the sudden silence that envelops the street, I breathe in the smell that follows a torrent of rain. I wrote a novel here on Kazancı. On the fringes of the book is an old woman who secretly collects the artifacts that the other residents are so eager to discard. Sometimes I liken my writing to walking on a pile of rubble. Atop the pile I stop and listen for the sounds of breathing amid the stones. Perhaps this is what the saint at the top of the street was trying to tell us. Look to the stories beneath your feet.
The Street of the Cauldron Makers was produced by Sandy Tolan and Homelands Productions. Here's KUAZ's Mark McLemore with the Arizona Spotlight Arts Calendar.
A lot of things happening around town this weekend, including the Hotel Congress Nightmare on Congress Street celebration, happening indoor and outdoor with costume contests and more. That's downtown Saturday night. Dia de los Muertos, a new exhibition at the Arizona State Museum, presents Masks of Mexico. That runs at the U of A near the main gate. The Live Theater Workshop's late night series has Fuddy Mirrors at 10:30 in the evening, Friday and Saturday night at 5317 East Speedway. Also this weekend, the Desert Diamond Casino presents the 6th Annual Bluegrass Music Festival, Friday and Saturday evening, and the Vietnam Vets of America present the 18th Annual NAM Jam this Sunday, happening at Demeester Center at Reed Park from 8 until 8.
Arizona Spotlight is a production of KUAZ Radio from the University of Arizona and is produced in the KUAZ studios by Jim Blackwood, with production assistance from Ginger Duran. Our executive producer is Peter Michaels. A portion of the music heard on today's program was written and performed by Calexico. I'm Julie Burock.